it please the court.
Good morning.
Submit that in this case, the record is quite clear that had the RCMP honored its contractual obligations rather than breaching and terminating the contract, that Cruise Connections would have, at the appropriate time designated in the contract, sent invoices to the RCMP directing payment at its bank in Winston-Salem, and that the RCMP would have made payment to the bank in Winston-Salem. Because of that, I think a question presented for the court's consideration is whether a foreign sovereign may defeat and avoid jurisdiction in the United States by its own wrongful conduct in terminating a contract before the other party to the contract, who enjoys a right to choose the place of payment and who has in fact chosen the place of payment and can show that through demonstrable evidence, as we have here, that he chose a place in the United States, but has been unable to communicate that choice to the foreign sovereign before the breach because the contract has not yet given him the occasion and right to designate through his invoicing.
Are you starting with this argument because you think it's stronger than your argument about the loss of business in the United States?
No, I'm starting with it because I think it's equally strong, and I've got to pick one. I was actually going to move on to
Let me ask a question about this.
Yes, Your Honor.
Part. You said in your reply brief that it's conceded by both sides that payment would be through the method of wire transfer. Where was that concession?
It's in the affidavit of the Cruise Connections principals that the parties agreed on wire transfer.
And there's no dispute from the other side on that?
I've not seen any. No, Your Honor.
That's why you say it's an agreement.
Yes, Your Honor. Right. Yes, Your Honor.
And what do you think about the Mountie's position that the financial code refers to the pot within the Canadian budget that you were to designate as the source of the funds to pay you?
I've looked at their record citation, and there's no question but that it says financial codes. I don't understand what that means in that part of the record. There isn't evidence on it, and I think we have to go with interpretation of what financial codes reasonably means. I think it means provide payment instructions.
Well, what did you think about their argument that financial codes means the budget category in Canada?
What I was attempting to say was that what they cite to is this provision in the purchase order that lists financial codes, but I frankly couldn't understand what it meant. So I don't know that their argument is correct, that it means tell us to pay from this pot of money. I think that there's no question but that we were required to and entitled to invoice, that there's no question but that we had agreed.
How would you even know what pot of money the Canadians would use to pay you?
I don't know. I don't know.
I thought that would be your answer.
Well, I frankly didn't understand what they meant by financial codes when I tried to read that portion of it. Getting to Your Honor's question about the destruction of or the prevention of commercial activity, I think that another question for the court to consider is whether a contract which entered into by a foreign sovereign, which expressly requires, and I think this is very important, has as its essential purpose the formation of additional contracts, and that those contracts represent significant commercial activity in the United States.
Did those contracts have to be U.S. contracts?
They did not have to be. They were. The RCMP knew that they were because we had provided, Cruise Connections had provided the CPA's charter party agreements to the RCMP for the RCMP to review and approve, which they did. The RCMP concedes in its brief, page 32, quoting the lower court, in approval of the lower court statement, which is in fact correct, that the charter party agreements were ready to be signed. The only evidence about why they were not signed is in the record, and it's clear that it was because the RCMP dishonored its obligation to pay the taxes, the cruise lines backed out, and that's the only reason that the CPAs were not signed.
I don't understand the flow of events. Did the Canadian government, did they cancel the contract? Did they cancel the contract with your client first?
Yes.
So then what do you mean that the charter companies backed out? There was no contract at that point, right?
What happened was that we were set to sign in September the charter party agreements. The pens were in the hand, essentially, figuratively. Mm-hmm. At that point, the cruise lines asked for assurance that the taxes would be paid.
Right.
And the RCMP initially provided that assurance, then backed out on that assurance.
I understand all that. I read all that in your brief. I just was asking, you said that the charter party companies backed out.
Yes. Right?
But didn't the Mounties cancel the contract with your client before that? So there wasn't anything for them to back out of, right?
Well,
you didn't have a contract anymore, right? You had nothing to subcontract at that point.
After the breach.
Yeah.
After the RCMP terminated, that's right. We had nothing to subcontract. The whole deal was
over. I'm a little confused. What happened first? Did the charter companies back out when they didn't get an answer from the Mounties? And then subsequently, was there a cancellation of the contract with you?
The confusion may arise out of the term back out. When the RCMP refused to pay the taxes, the cruise lines refused to sign the agreement.
I thought you said somewhere in your brief that the Mounties canceled the contract. Is that not true?
That is correct. But what happened is that the cruise lines refused to sign when the Mounties refused to pay the taxes. Then the parties, Cruise Connections and the RCMP, tried to negotiate. Let's get this deal back on track. Yes. Pay the taxes. The cruise lines were still waiting to potentially sign the agreement if the taxes would be paid for by the RCMP, and ultimately the RCMP terminated the contract in November. Okay.
Is that all clear from either your complaint? Is that clear from a complaint, your complaint or an affidavit?
I think it's clear from the complaint. I hope it is. It's supposed to be laid out in there. And I think that the affidavit, I think of Tracy Kelly, is the one that lays out with the most detail that history.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. If I appear to have 2.5 minutes, if I could save the remainder for rebuttal, I'd be grateful.
Sure, you would like to, you can.
Uh-huh. Just a second.
The
statement of work specifies Holland America, right?
The statement of work specified Holland America.
And that is part of the contract.
That is correct.
Okay, so your contract with the Canadians includes reference to the proposition that you will be subcontracting with a corporation sited in Seattle.
That is correct. When we originally got the bid, we didn't have to contract with the United States company, but we certainly did, and that is set forth in the contract. You are correct. Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm John Townsend for the Government of Canada. Your Honors, that the appellant did not receive a payment in the United States was not a direct effect of conduct by the Government of Canada for two principal reasons. The first is that it did not follow as an immediate consequence of Canada's alleged breach. And this court in the Prince case emphasized the need that a consequence be immediate and found in that case that too many intervening elements between the asserted cause and effect would defeat the directness of an effect.
So what are the intervening events between the Canadian cancellation and the consequence that in the United States the subcontracts were not signed and therefore obviously not carried out?
Well, Your Honor, with regard to the subcontracts, going to those first, there would first have had to have been a principal contract.
Why?
Because I'm only assuming, that the cruise lines would have wanted assurance that there was a contract in place before they signed. They certainly wanted assurance that there was a clear understanding about the payment of Canadian taxes, which there was not.
Okay, but the... the non-signing of these contracts follows ineluctably from what the plaintiffs characterize as a breach by your client.
Well, Your Honor, I grant you they would not have been signed. They certainly were not signed in part because of the failure of the main contract. Whether there was a breach by my client, I accept for purposes of the argument.
Leave that up in the air.
That's one of a series of events, Your Honor.
Can I give you a hypothetical?
Yes, sir.
Suppose this was a service contract in which Cruise was offering to provide an enormous amount of employment in the United States. In anticipation of that, they hired 1,000 people on a contingent basis, contingent on the contract with Canada being, with Canadian, with the Mounties being signed. And Canada breaches. Can you seriously argue in that circumstances that all of that employment activity would not be a direct effect?
Your Honor, had Canada consented to that understanding, had the hiring been made with its approval,
With its approval, why would it matter?
Because I think if you go out and hire on speculation, it's very hard then to prove that the effect of its cancellation.
It wasn't speculation. Let's say you have you had a contract. You had a contract to provide services to Canada. Canada didn't care how you provided the services. You had a contract to provide services. And you went out and hired 1,000 people to do the work.
I don't know of any case that finds that sort of direct effect.
Well, that's why I'm asking whether is your argument that would not be a direct effect?
I think that would be a direct effect.
That's
not what you have here.
I'm not sure I understand the distinction.
Well, Your Honor, there is a chain of dominoes that the contracts would have to have been signed. The ships would have to have been provided. Passengers would have to have been put on them.
The ships being provided, that's the contracts we're talking about, the subcontracts.
Which weren't signed. And then the revenue they're talking about.
They weren't signed because your client allegedly, we have to assume is true here, canceled the contract.
But Judge Tittell, what the consequence alleged to have followed from the subcontracts was the loss of onboard revenue.
No. It was a loss of $39 million in contracts with three charter companies.
But that was a payment by Cruise Connections. That was money they didn't have to pay.
No, but that's $39 million of business in the United States that did not occur.
It did not
occur. Who cares where the profit is?
Because, Your Honor, that's not injury to this plaintiff.
But then he might lose the case on the merits. The only question here is whether your client's immune.
But, Your Honor,
The clause doesn't speak about injury to the plaintiff. The clause speaks about direct effect in the United States.
And in the Agrocomplex case in this court, Your Honor, where money was supposed to be paid by a Bulgarian bank to a Turkish bank in the United States, this court found that was not a direct effect because it was not required by the plaintiff's contract with the foreign sovereign.
That was a bank account case, right?
That was a bank account.
Okay.
Well, that was a bank
money transfer
case.
But the questions we're asking you are not focusing on the bank account. The question isn't here. These questions aren't focused on whether the bank account is enough to create a direct effect. But these 30-some million dollars in contracts with the charter companies. That's the question. What I don't understand is why the loss of $30 million plus of charter business in the United States, which occurred, which happened because your client canceled the contract, isn't a, quote, direct effect in the United States.
Well, Your Honor, first, those contracts had not been signed.
Of course they hadn't been, because they weren't going to be signed until Cruz had a contract in hand.
That's true, Your Honor. But
would your case be different if those contracts had been signed, subject to the contract between you and Cruz?
I think had they been signed with the approval of the government of Canada, it would be different.
Why? Did you have a right to approve those?
that I don't think we can be, I don't think Canada can be held answerable for an effect
you
it
didn't
has
have
not
a right
undertaken.
To approve. You didn't have a right to approve those.
I think actually, Your Honor, in the articles that the charters are subject to at least notification to Canada, I suspect
Had you been notified?
There have been discussions about them.
So you've been notified?
There have been notice of the discussions, but the contracts had not been signed. And
we're going around in circles. Let me go and ask another question, which goes to the first argument in the case. In all the cases that you've cited, you don't have a situation where there is a direct contract between a foreign entity and an American corporation to be administered in the United States. You don't have anything like that. The bank cases are all peripheral, aren't they?
They're all peripheral or provide for payment in the United States or don't provide for payment in the United States, one or the other.
Where would you have, if this contract had been performed, where would it have been anticipated that you would have paid Cruz?
Well, the first payment is quite clear, Your Honor.
No. I'm not asking about the first payment because that was a special circumstance for security.
That was 80% of the contract.
Yes, I know. But that was only for security for the letter of credit or the...
It was made there to secure the letter of credit,
right.
Part of it was required to do that.
Well, you had still 20% to pay. Where under normal contract principles would you have paid?
Probably, as Mr. Strauch has argued, wherever the invoice specified. But
right.
There was
then you agree with the district judge that Cruz had the authority to tell you where to pay.
As a practical matter, yes. It's not explicit in the contract, but as a practical matter, yes. But it had, Cruz Connections had an account in Canadian dollars.
In that connection, the case is different from all the other cited cases.
Well, Your Honor, there is no agreement that they can specify a place in the United States.
You just said they could.
There is no express agreement. There is an implied agreement that they will pay invoices as received.
And the invoices would tell you where to pay.
Right. And the only account in existence in Canadian dollars in the name of Cruz Connections was with the Royal Bank of Canada in Victoria.
Yeah, but they didn't. Did Cruz Connections have an account with the Royal Canadian Bank?
Yes, sir. That was their account.
No. That was only an account for purposes of letter of credit. That wasn't a separate account.
Well, they opened the account in their name, and then they made a separate agreement with the bank.
Right.
Pledging
that's different from what
a
you
portion
said.
Of the money to be received.
That's different from what you said in your brief. In your brief, you said it was an agreement with you.
Well, there was a separate agreement with the Government of Canada that the first payment would be made to that account. It's not in the principal articles. It's in a separate agreement. So that to get to the second agreement, you have, again, you don't have a direct effect. You have intervening events.
But you do agree that in had the invoice come in, directing you to pay in North Carolina, you would have been obliged to pay in North Carolina.
I'm speculating, and before you get to that, Your Honor, they would have to have performed the contract. The first payment would have to have been made in Canada.
That's not relevant.
Well, Your Honor, to have a direct effect, this Court has held intervening causes defeat the directness of an effect. And you would have intervening elements.
You mean if they had violated the contract?
If they had failed to perform the contract...
If my inhales had wheels, should be a trolley car.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't understand you.
Forget it.
I think as you conceded in response to Judge Silberman's question, none of those cases that you're relying on involve a situation where you have a foreign sovereign with a direct contract with a U.S. company. None of those are that kind of case.
There are direct contracts between a foreign sovereign and a U.S. person. Peterson against Saudi Arabia is direct dealing between...
That's an individual resident in the U.S.
Right. And there was no need for, as I remember the case, particularly, I think I wrote it, the performance of the contract was not to take place in the United States.
Nor, but the performance of this contract was not to take place in the United States either. It was to take place in Vancouver in Canada. That's where the ships were to be provided. That's where the Mounties were to occupy them. That's where the Olympics are being held coincidentally this week.
So give us an example of a case where you would concede that, where you have a situation between a foreign government and a U.S. company that the foreign company, the foreign country, breaches that would create a direct effect?
Well,
give me an example. Forget the bank account cases.
Had there been agreement on place of payment or place of performance, and the Supreme Court's made that distinction clear in Weltover. It's place of performance or place of payment. Had performance had to take place in the United States, had Canada contracted to have a ship built in the United States, for example, so that the performance had to take place at a shipyard in San Diego. Right.
But if they have exactly the same contract but don't say where it's to be performed, but the U.S. company builds it in San Diego, that's a different case?
I think that's a different case, Your Honor.
And why is that?
I get that from the language, direct effect. Uh-huh. I noticed that, in trying to introduce intervening events, you talk about the proposition that there was no promise to execute the charter party agreements with the specific companies, and the charter party agreements were not signed. Those are all true propositions. But causality, although complex, is distinct from the question of legal obligation. You keep going back to a necessity for legal obligation, which I don't see in the phrase direct effect at all.
Well, I think it derives, Your Honor, from the Supreme Court's use in Weltover of the phrase...
That's a case where you have non-American plaintiffs and a non-American... Well, we always have a non-American defendant, and you have no action anticipated at all in the U.S. except for these payment obligations. So it's understandable they focused on the payment obligations, but the enterprise being devoid of U.S. connection otherwise.
Well, otherwise, this one, they could have gone to anyone for those ships. They went to American companies.
But it was clear by the time of the breach, the alleged breach, the acts constituting the alleged breach, that the way in which it would be performed was through transactions with firms located in America.
At a remove. I mean, first, Cruise Connections was located in America.
Right.
Then Cruise Connections had to turn around and find ships somewhere.
Right.
And send them to Vancouver.
Right.
But the direct effect on Cruise Connections, and I submit, Your Honor, the direct...
It doesn't say direct effect on the plaintiff, incidentally.
No, it says direct effect in the United States,
right.
Your Honor. But... The fact that the plaintiff, I don't know of any case that finds, based on a plaintiff's subcontracts, that there is a direct effect in the United States. There would be an indirect effect.
But the question is, what is it in the language that precludes that from being classified as a direct effect?
I think, Your Honor, in the words of this court in the Prince case, there are too many intervening elements.
But the intervening elements that you talk about here are the absence of various legal obligations, but causality operates independent of legal obligations.
Well,
not completely independently, but legal obligations are only a factor in determining causation.
Well, to cause a loss to the plaintiff, though, you would have to have found passengers for those ships.
That's why you might ultimately win on the merits. You see, you're not focusing on the distinction here between the effect in the United States and the Canadian government's responsibility for the loss to the plaintiff. That's the difference.
Let me sharpen the point that Tatel just made by asking this hypothetical. Suppose a steel company in the United States contracts with a foreign country to supply massive tons of steel, and the foreign country defaults. Breaches the contract. Is there jurisdiction in the United States under this statute?
If the steel's here and was to be shipped from here, I would think there would be, Your Honor.
Because payment, without any provision in the contract as to where payment is to be made, because it's implicit in a situation like that, that payment would be made in the United States. Isn't that correct?
I would agree with you, sir.
So that takes away the argument that you have to have an agreement as to where payment is to be made, if in the normal course of law, both economic or commercial activity and law, payment would be made in the United States, then that would be a direct effect if there's a default.
Well, if there's an implied, I think the cases say if there's an implied agreement or an established course of conduct between the parties.
But wouldn't this be implied in the situation? And you agreed in my hypothetical.
In your hypothetical, I think it would be implied.
What's the difference between manufacturing steel and contracting for cruise ships?
Well, first, there is an agreement here to pay in Canada 80% of the price, and no provision as to where to pay the second and third payments.
Well, that's what we're talking about. Those
have to be paid.
There's an intervening factor that caused the 80% to be paid at the Royal Bank in Toronto. That wasn't part of your agreement with Cruise. That was Cruise's direction to you, which you acceded to. They're allowed to assign there. If they had a legal right to be paid in North Carolina, they can certainly assign it to a bank in Canada.
It was pursuant to a direction acceded to. But let me stress, Your Honor, payment was made in Canadian dollars.
What's that got to do with the price?
They've got to accept that payment in some bank that takes Canadian dollars. And they had a Canadian dollar.
All American banks will take Canadian dollars. I'm an ex-banker. I can assure you all American banks will take Canadian dollars. As a matter of fact, they may prefer Canadian dollars now to American dollars.
That changes from month to month, Judge. This one, they had a Canadian dollar account. They could as well have kept it open, have received the payment there, and wired it wherever they wanted it.
Wait a minute. Received payment where?
At their account in Victoria. It was Cruise Connections' account in Victoria that was the only agreed account to which payment was directed.
Well, except that you agreed that the wire transfer, their direction to wire transfer to North Carolina would have been their option.
They could have superseded that direction with a different direction, but they never did.
They could have said that we want to be paid in Buenos Aires, too.
They could, Your Honor.
Yeah. Let me adjust the hypothetical a little bit, or maybe this was Judge Silverman's hypothetical. Suppose the Canadian government wants to buy, you have a contract, two parts to it. One, they want to buy U.S. steel made in the United States, right?
Yes, sir.
And they want to be paid in Canada.
Yes, sir.
In other words, they're going to pay the American company in the Victoria Bank.
And I think clearly the payment would not be a direct, or the non-payment would not be a direct effect by itself.
Right.
If they're buying steel.
But what about the steel? They're not. it's a contract to buy $100 million worth of U.S. steel, and they breach the contract. And the contract provides for payment in Canada. The American company agreed to accept Canadian dollars in a Canadian bank. Are you saying that that's not a direct effect in the United States?
It might not be, Your Honor.
I mean, really?
You've got payment in the United States in Canada. On a deal in Canada.
Yeah.
They
cancel a $100 million contract for steel in the United States, a contract that under which the American company would have hired 1,000 employees to produce that steel. That's not a direct effect in the United States because they agreed to pay in a Canadian bank.
If they've hired them, if they've made the steel, if it's sitting there waiting.
Don't change my hypothetical. It's a contract to buy $100 million of steel.
And I think, Your Honor, in the Zidane case, which Judge Silberman did write, this court said that an economic loss to an American company is not a direct effect within the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act.
Not itself.
You accept the correction, sir. My time is well passed up.
No. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Let's see. I think you had, what do you have, 2.5 minutes?
1 minute.
1 minute. Go ahead.
I have a question for you, just out of curiosity. Is the statute of limitations still within your ambit in Canada, if you had to sue in Canada?
My understanding that it is, yes, that we're okay.
Because you have another issue in this case, as you well know, even if you win here, you've got the forum non-convenience question, and you've got a real problem there because the contract calls for Canadian law.
The contract does call for Canadian law. I hope that you're mistaken that I have a real problem there. I think we're actually pretty good on that, but
okay.
You'll worry about that later, right?
Hopefully, yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
How much time do you have in the statute of limitation in Canada?
I believe a few years, several years. Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted.